Julie, I'm looking forward to today's discussion. We're finally past the elections, but this is the election cycle that never dies. So Shelley and Todd are going to join us here today to take the pulse and look at how we navigate this path forward.
Margie, I agree. It is that cycle that never dies. And I think they're going to really highlight some important things. A couple of points that will come out is that companies still need to be very proactive now. It's not going to be a surprise that scenario modeling is still on the radar. And then we're going to see some points that they raise about the OECD project's likelihood of success. So I'm really looking forward to today. So Margie, let's talk tax.
Listening to Tap into Tax, PwC's podcast series covering current regulatory, legislative, and technology hot topics through the lens of our tax technical leaders, as well as process and technology subject matter specialists.
This podcast features discussions with some of our leading minds around tax, trade, and domestic policy. Stay tuned to our regular updates and subscribe to our series to get notified as new episodes are published.
Welcome, listeners. This is Margie Dunjashaw. I'm PwC's U.S. Tax Reporting and Strategy Leader. And today I'm joined by Julie Allen, PwC's National Tax Services Leader. On this episode of Tap into Tax, we are joined by Todd Metcalf, a principal in PwC's Tax Policy Services Group. And we're also happy to welcome back Shelley Guyberson, PwC's Tax Services Leader. It is December 7th. So as of today, we're going to have this discussion. As you all know, things change rapidly, so keep your ears open. Shelley, Todd, thank you for joining us today, and welcome back to Tap into Tax.
Thanks, Julie and Margie. Happy to be with you.
Hi, good morning. Thanks, Julie. Thanks, Margie.
We are here today to discuss the results of our latest Pulse survey, which was fielded after the election. And this is our third survey of executives to get a reading on how U.S. business leaders see the policy, legislative, and regulatory environment evolving and what that means for their strategies. We fielded this current survey from November 9th to November 13th, 2020. And it reflects the responses from 656 U.S. business leaders, including CFOs, COOs, risk management leaders, CHROs, and tax leaders, among others. 73% of all respondents were from Fortune 1000 companies. So with that background, let's dive right in. Shelley, this is the third iteration of the Pulse survey. Did anything stand out or surprise you in the results?
Thanks, Julie. One thing I was struck by is that companies are being very proactive right now. There's a consensus that analysis paralysis is not an option and really is no longer necessary as the election results provide more certainty about the tax landscape. Whichever way the Georgia Senate races fall, it's going to be a closely divided Congress, so companies aren't anticipating a major fundamental overhaul of the tax code. But with more certainty than they had pre-election, assumptions about tax policy are driving investment decisions, companies are reconsidering their business plans, and business modeling is top of mind. Nearly 90% of business leaders plan on modeling the impact of President-elect Biden's tax proposals, and over half of tax leaders and over 70% of all executives stated that they're considering their current investment plans. On the international side, the split of opinion on the OECD project's likelihood of success really jumped out at me. Tax leaders agree that the OECD Global Business Income Taxation Project will have a significant impact, but they're almost split down the middle and divided on the likely outcome of the effort. Regardless of what side they were on, it seems that we're directionally headed to international tax controversy, especially on issues like people, substance, and transfer pricing.
Shelley, thanks for that background. I think really focusing on companies being proactive and not coming away from watching what's going on the international stage is very important. So Todd, with that, what do you make of these findings that Shelley has mentioned and what jumped out to you?
Thanks, Julie. I agree with Shelley that those two findings reveal key insights into the corporate tax and business environment, especially given that the response period was between November 9th and 13th, when the press had projected President-elect Biden to have won the U.S. presidential election. It is clear from these responses that companies understand the importance of scenario planning in the short and long term on the domestic and the international stage. What also jumped out to me was the level of engagement on both the planning and policymaking front. The uncertainty and evolving landscape under a Biden administration is a huge potential pain point. Almost 65% of our respondents view policy and regulatory risk as more pressing over the next 4 years. The survey also showed that over three quarters of tax buyers are planning to engage with elected officials and other policymakers to raise awareness of the impact of these proposals on business. Companies are well served to engage in modeling potential tax policy changes that may influence business decisions like capital investment, R&D, workforce, and global footprint while the dust from the election is still settling. But the clock is ticking on both the domestic and international fronts, so policy engagement with those key decision makers is critical.
Todd, I like how we're starting the conversation about modeling. Companies now have some direction, but the question that is on my mind for you, Todd, is what provisions of President-elect Biden's proposals are you seeing companies focus on right now? The list is long, so where do they start?
You're right, Margie. The list is long. During his campaign, President-elect Biden outlined several ambitious tax proposals, including a 28% corporate tax rate, a 10% surtax on offshore production activities, an increased GILTI rate, and a proposed global minimum tax on book income. He also proposed a number of incentives for companies to bring more economic activities onshore and create more U.S. jobs, including a 10% advanceable tax credit for restoring production, revitalizing existing closed or closing facilities, retooling facilities for advanced manufacturing, and expanding manufacturing payroll, as well as a very ambitious clean energy initiative. The near-term versus long-term prospects of these proposals are highly dependent on the Senate runoffs in Georgia on January 5th that Shelley mentioned. This will be a critical inflection point, resulting in either a narrow majority for Democrats or continued Republican control. Either way, we're not likely to see massive changes, and we're certainly not likely to see major federal tax increases if Republicans retain control of the Senate. Even if Democrats take both of those seats in Georgia, the narrowness of the majority, both in the House and the Senate, mean that the latitude for change is also pretty significantly curbed. However, companies should not entirely ignore these proposals, as a corporate rate of as high as 25% might be agreed upon and enacted by a Democratic Congress. And this number would put the U.S. at one of the highest global rates, second only to Portugal. While a Republican majority in the Senate would reduce the possibility of near-term reform, this does not justify inaction. 2022 is just around the corner and brings another round of congressional elections, and there are also areas of potential bipartisan compromise that could resurface even sooner than that. With 2022 and the possibility of another change in congressional control just over the horizon, companies should not overlook the Biden campaign proposals that may not seem as popular on a bipartisan level, but which would have a significant impact on other calculations like BEAT, GILTI, FDII, and the foreign tax credit. Regardless of how unpopular any of President Biden's proposals may seem right now, it is important for the C-suite to realize they are not going anywhere. Policy ideas are persistent. What may not seem likely today may ripen down the road. I think the issue for scenario planning, therefore, is not necessarily if, but when for many of these proposals. Once a proposal is out there, it's hard to put that genie back in the bottle. Vigilance is vital. Companies are completely right to be sharply focused on scenario planning and poised to react quickly to policy and regulatory shifts. 2021 will be a critical year for companies to execute changes to their business models in reaction to COVID-19, return to the workplace, and the renewed focus on environmental, social, and governance factors. Now is the time to get ahead of those strategies and ensure tax is in lockstep with C-suite priorities.
Todd, that was a lot of information packed in there that was very helpful. I think your emphasis on not overlooking some of those proposals and then watching for the incentives for U.S. activity, and I think also the important focus on bipartisan compromise. So Todd, with that, you mentioned potential areas of compromise and proposals that could be more relevant in the near future. Can you elaborate for our audience where tax should focus the attention of the C-suite?
Sure, Julie. And let me first say, while the Senate runoffs may steer the direction of some of this planning, if companies wait until that election is over, they will already be behind. In either case, we're going to have a historically divided government, even if Democrats win both seats. And their majority in both chambers in that case would be so narrow, it is going to be difficult to achieve consensus on big changes. For the short term, tax should focus the attention of the C-suite on proposals that may attract more bipartisanship. Those should be the priorities. For example, proposals related to increasing U.S. investments, i.e. onshoring, U.S. jobs, and COVID-19 related tax legislation are likely to garner support on both sides of the aisle. Regardless of control, supporting the economy, increasing U.S. jobs, bolstering U.S. manufacturing are clearly bipartisan priorities. Therefore, companies should model out the proposals that are more likely to result in that compromise. For example, related to onshoring, I want to note that half of executives in our survey noted that outsourcing is a top area of allocation in 2021. If the Biden proposals were to become law, we could see a shift in that trend. We can also read some tea leaves from President-elect Biden's agenda and the transition team. His agenda early on is going to be focused on COVID cleanup, on the economy, on the environment, healthcare, and re-engaging on the international level. The breadth and depth of these agenda priorities, including where tax will fit in, will largely be affected by the outcome of those Senate elections in Georgia. Short term, companies also need to contemplate the expiration of several key tax extenders in 2020, including CFC look-through, the Work Opportunity Tax Credit, and the Employer Tax Credit for Paid Leave, as well as a number of excise taxes. Also, just a year away, in 2022, we will see changes to the interest expense deduction and R&D expensing provisions. These are areas where the C-suite can engage with policymakers now. Our Pulse survey showed that 71% of tax leaders noted they would like to see R&D expensing instead of capitalization made permanent. This is likely to be a provision that garners bipartisan support for change. But until then, companies need also to prepare for the possibility of inaction, of gridlock, and the automatic implementation of those two changes.
Shelley, what about you? What operational areas are you seeing that present opportunities for the tax suite to partner with the C-suite?
Thanks, Margie. I'll start out just by agreeing with Todd's point that companies are aware that no proposal is unimportant or can be glossed over right now. In fact, there's a great deal of opportunity to engage with policymakers, and now's the time. Let me highlight a few specific examples of tax and operational areas that companies are really focused on right now. First, international and transfer pricing planning are critical. With the continued need for planning related to international provisions that Todd mentioned, like GILTI, FDII, and BEAT, and with heightened pressure from overseas, including the EU Anti-Tax Avoidance Directive and the OECD BEPS 2.0 project, where we expect a great deal of activity over the next 12 months, there's a lot of work to be done. Companies are taking a hard look at their supply chains, and tax needs to be prepared to engage with the C-suite. During the pandemic, companies have re-examined, seen vulnerabilities, and changed or contemplated changing their supply chain structures. These changes are not driven primarily by tax, of course, but from business, political, and environmental factors like the pandemic, focusing on carbon footprint and cost savings. But tax has a major role to play in having an efficient and effective supply chain. Second, foreign tax credit and TCJA planning. Even if President-elect Biden's proposals are not an immediate prospect, Todd is right. This is the time to plan, regardless of how likely a given provision is to move forward in the next year or two. And good old-fashioned attribute planning is key. With more certainty and a low likelihood of major tax overhaul, and as Todd noted, with several major TCJA provisions still to come into effect, companies are taking advantage of what they know right now to position themselves for the future. And as I mentioned, opportunities may exist to engage with policymakers in these areas to shape their impact. The deals market is really ramping up right now with acquisitions, divestitures, and IPOs. And we're seeing a lot of contemplated IP structuring given the complexities of the U.S. and non-U.S. international rules. So companies are really looking at planning strategies and all the way through execution and documentation. Finally, on compliance and risk, our survey found that with the new administration, half of respondents have identified compliance risk and controversy as a more pressing area of concern. It's important for tax directors to convey in their messaging to the C-suite that tax compliance and reporting is not just another task. It's an important strategy. And I'm seeing how seriously this message is being taken. Companies are taking a hard look at compliance and examining what aspects of their story may have changed in several key compliance areas, including transfer pricing documentation, expanded reporting requirements under BEPS and country by country, and new liabilities and reporting due to U.S. tax reform.
Thank you, Shelley and Todd. I think that to this point, we've received a lot of information from both of you that our listeners can take away and use in their decision-making. We've talked about the Senate runoffs. We've talked about the proposals. And we've talked about those things that we should really keep our eye on, such as modeling and the tax and operational areas that are so key to decision-making. So with that, Shelley, I am going to come back to you. And let's move on to that next huge topic of 2020, the economy. In the latest reports, we saw that unemployment dropped 1 percentage point to 6.9%, and that in the U.S., the GDP declined the least among major OECD economies through the first three quarters of 2020. So, Shelley, how do executives and tax leaders feel about the economic outlook as it relates to tax policy?
The global economic downturn and financial impact of the pandemic on liquidity, operations, and supply chains is, of course, a huge concern for almost half of the business leaders in our pulse survey. The majority of executives ranked a new wave of COVID infections and potential business shutdowns as their top concern about operating in the current business environment. Over half of business leaders agreed that further economic relief or stimulus is very important, and even more tax leaders agree that it's important for new federal COVID-19-related stimulus legislation to include business tax relief provisions. This aligns with the general tone of the C-suite, which is not surprising given the current environment. The renewed focus on business stimulus is not surprising given the recent economic numbers. The overall GDP in the third quarter was down about 3.5% compared to the end of 2019, which is the best of the G7, but still represents a significant decline. Julie, you noted the U.S. unemployment rate. It declined in November from 6.9% to 6.7%, but only because of a decline in the labor force. 245,000 jobs were added to the economy, which is the slowest rate of growth since the recovery began, and still leaves nearly 10 million fewer jobs than in February. And as for the fourth quarter GDP projection, many economists see about 1% growth quarter over quarter, or about 4% on an annualized basis. Looking ahead to FY21, many economists are forecasting around 4% growth in 2021 as COVID-19 vaccines become more readily available over the first half of the year.
Thanks for sharing those percentages with us. I think those numbers don't lie and really show where the C-suite is focused and where we should all be focused. And so, Todd, I'll come over to you now. What does all of this mean in terms of where Congress may land on the next COVID-19 stimulus package? Do you see both sides coming together and finding some common ground in the near future?
Well, Julie, as Shelley mentioned, there is a continued desire, 61% of our respondents, for a federal COVID-19 relief bill to provide business and individual relief sooner than later. Congress is now working toward that, but has not yet reached an agreement, and so the timing of potential action remains unclear. Many companies are hopeful that the bill will include another round of funding for Paycheck Protection Program loans, extending and expanding the Employee Retention Tax Credit, liability protection, and other aid to businesses. There is growing pressure to act, and inaction is more and more seen as not an option. The question is mostly one of timing. Both sides agree that relief is a priority, and there is a desire to move forward sooner rather than later. There are a number of hurdles to reaching an agreement, but there is more hope than there has been lately that, as President-elect Biden described it, a down payment on necessary relief may be enacted prior to the end of the year. In the last few days, we've seen a lot of activity on both sides of the Capitol and both sides of the aisle aimed at finding a compromise on additional COVID relief. As a consequence, the odds of seeing a relief package enacted before the end of the year has greatly increased in recent days. However, it is important to note that any bill before the end of the year will ultimately need President Trump's sign-off as well. Because federal funding is set to expire on December 11, the next few days will be a critical point and time as to whether a deal on COVID relief can ultimately be reached. It remains to be seen whether any business tax relief will be part of the package. And if so, it may be in the form of tax extenders aimed at employers, for example, the Work Opportunity Tax Credit, Employee Retention Credit, or other areas focused on COVID relief. There's a real resistance to doing broader tax measures outside of the COVID space. Now, President-elect Biden may receive pushback on the next round since he's described this as a down payment, but he brings a unique legislative background compared to other presidents, given his long tenure in the Senate and deep relationships. This is going to matter when looking at the ability to forge bipartisan consensus, whether that's in the near term on COVID relief or in the longer term on the international horizon with treaty partners and with the OECD. All of these things are going to continue to be a priority as we look ahead to 2021.
I'd also like to quickly hit on a few points that our executives noted in the survey that reveal why the support is so important. Another huge standout in this wave was the emphasis on investments in workforce. So let me make a few points there. As I mentioned before, a new wave of COVID-19 infections leading to further shutdowns is the biggest concern for over half of business leaders. Companies are beginning to shift their focus toward a return to work, which has led to a change in workplace safety measures, reconfigured work sites, and alternative staffing arrangements. In fact, over 70% of CFOs are focused on workplace safety and travel reduction measures. Companies also noted that the biggest workforce challenge over the next 12 months will be upskilling and retaining employees to drive revenue, with over half of executives focusing on this investment. However, we can't lose sight of other factors in the conversation and other key issues that companies are balancing in this new normal, including worker morale and mental health, as well as remote work and worker productivity. In line with the new business environment, over half of CFOs surveyed indicated that they had already or planned to make certain roles within their company permanently remote. Obviously, this is being led by business purpose, but it opens a whole host of issues from a tax perspective, including payroll, data protection, and corporate tax presence. Additionally, the political divide that Todd has mentioned that existed in the election results has led to companies shifting their corporate culture by increasing diversity and inclusion programs and providing new opportunities for employees to have difficult social conversations.
Shelley and Todd, thank you for that overview. I am seeing a lot of the same. I know there's been a focus on the stimulus or relief packages and what will we see next? And then what tax extenders might we be seeing introduced or carrying over? And I think this last point on the investments in workforce and that overall health of the workers is really key. And everybody has an eye on that right now. So with all of that, let's shift gears to international tax policy for just a minute. I want to go back to what Shelley mentioned at the beginning of our discussion about the OECD's findings. Todd, can we explore what it means for companies if there's an agreement reached versus a standstill or a failure?
Absolutely. The first thing to understand is there is absolutely no reason to wait for the outcome to scenario plan. Either way, we could see a significant sea change in the international tax landscape. I have consistently heard companies describe an OECD agreement as a horrible outcome and a lack of agreement as an even worse outcome. If the OECD project succeeds, it could upend the international tax system as we know it, as we've known it for decades. Companies need to determine whether they are in scope of the project, where they would be liable to tax, and what their minimum tax might be. In the United States, there are also a number of wild cards as relates to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, in particular, whether guilty would be grandfathered or otherwise deemed a safe harbor. Now, one thing that I think we can expect to remain consistent is the U.S. Treasury's position. Clearly, we're going to have a new administration with President Biden, and there's going to be a change at Treasury. This may change the rhetoric, but throughout the BEPS exercise, there has been consistent and violent bipartisan agreement on protecting U.S. companies, foreign digital taxes, and ring fences. These started as an Obama position when Biden was the vice president. And keep in mind that Biden's GILTI reforms are also applicable on a country-by-country basis, like in Pillar 2. So there may be some indication that you might be able to find a compromise in the Pillar 2 area. Moreover, we're beginning to see personnel be named, and personnel is policy. Janet Yellen is likely to be the Treasury Secretary in the Biden administration. We've seen a deputy Treasury Secretary nominated who has extensive international negotiating experience that will probably play a role in the OECD project. President-elect Biden has also announced additional nominations across his economic team. Many familiar names, many familiar with the international process. So there is a possibility that we could find some agreement and that U.S. positions could be protected. However, the project could also fail. And if it fails, businesses could be facing a patchwork of unilateral measures, DSTs, double taxation, the kinds of problems and issues that the OECD's tax authority was sort of designed to prevent. We know that the process is ongoing. Comments are due to the OECD on the 14th. There's a public consultation in January. So it is still not too late to engage with policymakers and other stakeholders on what could be the most significant transformation of the international tax landscape in decades.
Todd, Shelley, it seems like we are at quite a crossroads on the international front. We don't have a crystal ball, and frankly, even if we did, I think it'd be cloudy. So what can tax directors do now to help the C-suite prepare for this evolving landscape in international tax?
Regardless of outcome, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, I think this puts international tax planning and transfer pricing front and center. The OECD project and that potential patchwork of country-specific digital services taxes that Todd mentioned are really critical areas to focus on, of course. An increase in foreign tax controversy seems inevitable, but may present an opportunity to have a strategic offense through things like APAs. The EU Anti-Avoidance Tax Directive and the UK Diverted Profits Tax are examples that highlight the pressures companies are facing overseas. Data consistency and accuracy is really key in this environment. Tax directors should look at how they gather and report data to ensure that that consistency exists and that their data is efficient and effective. And the C-suite needs to be able to analyze its global tax footprint by jurisdiction in real time. Fortunately for tax leaders, digital is also a huge area that companies are investing in, with over 3/4 of executives viewing digital transformation as one of the most important areas to invest in for 2021. And that number was even higher in sectors like financial services. Technology and automation can help companies to present their story and underlying data to tax authorities and the public.
Speaking of optics, I would like to add that we're in an unprecedented era of transparency. Everything companies do, including the tax they pay, is under the microscope of tax authorities, the public, and other stakeholders. Reputational risk is key, as newspaper headlines about a company not paying its, quote, fair share of taxes are driving tax policy proposals in the U.S. and around the world. It's not just a tax issue, it is a public relations issue, making it even more critical to engage the C-suite. The emphasis on ESG, which was prominent in the Pulse survey, is extending to the tax arena. Today, we are truly in the era of ESG. It is a huge focal point for investors, customers, employees, and other stakeholders. In fact, more than half of executives believe environmental regulatory risk is more pressing under a Biden administration compared to the previous 4 years. And almost 1/3 plan to include ESG disclosures in their next annual report. In addition, tax-specific disclosures are becoming a part of these disclosures. And so it is important to watch developments in policy in other areas like the environment to get a sense of possible policy shifts in the tax policy area. Tax should work with the C-suite to manage the risk related to public disclosure of tax positions and integrate that carefully into the company's larger ESG strategy.
And Todd, I'll just add one point here that I know you have analyzed many of these issues that we just discussed in our recent Road to Election blog, where you discussed four areas of international tax planning that are critical for companies to focus on right now. And just so our listeners know, we will include a link to that blog in the notes to this podcast. Now let's go to our key takeaways. Todd and Shelley, will you leave us with your parting thoughts on what is on the pulse of C-suite and tax?
Absolutely, Julie. While the election results from November brought some much-needed clarity to the business environment, a couple of items are still outstanding. First, let's talk about what we do know. We know the direction President-elect Biden would like to go on the corporate tax front. We know that the House still has a Democratic majority that is more likely than not to support principles of the Biden plan. We also know that any major tax legislation in the United States Senate will need the support of all Democratic senators in order to pass. This fact alone, regardless of the Senate makeup, narrows the path for legislation. While we don't know where tax will land on the priority list of a Biden administration, we know that it is among many issues being considered by the president-elect. Tax has a seat at the table, and that alone is enough to accentuate the need to model and plan. While we don't have the details of any potential legislation, the Biden campaign has laid out its parameters. And again, finally, the big outstanding item that we're all focused on is the U.S. Senate runoff races in Georgia. These races, the outcome of these races, can shift the balance of power and move tax legislation even closer to the forefront.
Those are great points, Todd. I would just note four of my own. First, tax should bring potential issues to the CFO and C-suite early so the organization is not caught flat-footed. For example, tax should be communicating the potential tax impacts of BEPS 2.0 and the possible unilateral government legislation that Todd and I have been talking about. Second, tax should have a seat at the table for major investment decisions or changes to the company's business model. Changing the supply chain is either an opportunity to optimize your tax position, or if not done carefully, can make your supply chain costly and difficult to sustain. Third, tax matters to a company's brand, and tax should elevate the tax impact of C-suite decision-making to avoid unexpected financial costs and impacts to the brand. Opportunities may be overlooked if tax is not part of the company's planning process. And finally, companies should evaluate global consistency. Tax functions should review whether their critical reporting positions and documentation tell a similar story around the world. A mismatched approach to data could leave your enterprise vulnerable to financial risk, as well as reputational and brand risk if tax data becomes public.
Shelley, Todd, thanks for joining us again here on Tap Into Tax. And to our listeners, as always, thank you for joining us. And we look forward to speaking with you again as we move forward during this post-election cycle.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates and may sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.